I have to get the go-ahead. I'm calling to order the meeting of Monday, April 15th, 2013. It's the City Council meeting, and it is 6:31. And I'm wondering if we could stand, please, for a moment of silence for the victims in Boston. And now I'm going to ask for Isaiah West to come forward. He's doing our flag salute this evening. And I believe I see some people there who look like parents, maybe a teacher, is that right? So if the parents want to come forward and take photos, we're not going to be worried about that. So just come up and be wherever you feel comfortable. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Isaiah. He's 8 years old. He's a third grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. He likes seeing his friends and reading at school. Isaiah likes living on the Central Coast because he enjoys watching the sunset over the ocean. Oh, yeah, that's a good choice. Isaiah would like to study criminal justice and become a police officer when he's older. We have an opening here. Isaiah's interests are playing basketball, football, video games, and you take a little picture with me. So see those guys with the pictures? The cameras over there? We're going to hold this together. You shake everybody's hand just up here, starting with her, and I'm going to give you this kid, and make it even harder. That's a little present for school.
Thank you, Isaiah. You did a great job.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Good job, Isaiah. Thank you. You really did do a good job.
And I'm going to suggest that Isaiah's family and teachers might want to stay because we have another special teacher presentation. It'll just take about another 5 minutes. So if everyone could be seated now. And could we have the roll call, please?
Here.
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 Here. So before we go to all of that, we'll have our, a report from the city attorney regarding the last closed session meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members. On Monday, April 1st, after meeting in closed session on one item, that's conference with legal counsel on anticipated litigation, the City Council convened to open session. There were no reportable actions. And if I may take the liberty with regard to the tragedy in Boston, my colleague and the city attorney for City of Pismo, David Fleischman, ran the marathon, and we've got news from him. He's fine. He's okay.
Well, thank you. That's good to know that someone local's in good position. And we'll do an agenda review right now. We're going to review the order of business to be conducted, and we'll receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. Does anyone on the council have any changes?
Nope.
Staff, any changes? Okay. So we need a motion to adopt the agenda as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. And now we're going to go to my favorite part. This is the mayor's commendation. And tonight we're going to honor Theola Lynn. And I chose Theola because I think she is a wonderful example of someone who's been involved in the community for year after year after year, and I'm really pleased to see we have an ex-city manager, Mr. Dowdy, and a Parks and who is also Parks and Rec, and we have a current Parks and Rec person and former Mayor D. Santos, who's also on the school board, and I believe we also have Theola's family, her daughter, and there's some great-grandchildren there, too. So, Theola. She was born in 1923, and she was raised in a large family in the Indian Territory of El Dorado, Oklahoma. She often said when she was younger that she couldn't wait to grow up and be old enough to go to college and become a teacher. But wait, something happened. During her high school years, she met her future husband, and that's not what happened, Woody Lynn, who eventually became one of the longest-serving Grover City Council members, who served from 1970 to 1985. Theola said that during Woody's tenure, he worked towards installing curbs and gutters along West Grand Avenue, which we're very grateful for, and establishing mandatory garbage collection service throughout the city. She graduated from high school in 1941, and by then Woody had moved with his family to Arvin, California, and Theola was going on to college in Oklahoma. However, before she could graduate, just before she was ready to graduate weeks, her old Sunday school superintendent who'd helped her get a college scholarship to go to college called her up and said, Theola, we need a teacher. We've got to have a teacher. And he talked to her dad and asked her dad if she would be willing to come work and not finish college. And her dad said, oh, no. All those other girls have gone off to work in factories to make lots of money during World War II. Theola won't do that. She wants to go to college. But because it was her old Sunday school teacher, she agreed. She stopped college, and she started teaching in Oklahoma. And meantime, Woody was in World War II. And while he was there, he gave his car to his dad. When he got back, and his family had moved to the beautiful metropolis of Arvin, California. When he got back, he said to his dad, I want to marry that Theola. And his dad said, well, son, you better take the car then and go out to Oklahoma and get her. So he went out to Oklahoma, and it took him 3 days, I believe, to get there. And her parents wouldn't let her go off in a car with this man without being married. So it took him 3 days, but they managed to process a wedding license. They actually had to go to Texas for that, I believe. They didn't do that in Oklahoma. Her father and her local minister were there, and of course Woody, and they were married in Texas. And then their honeymoon was driving from El Dorado, Oklahoma to Arvin, California. And when Theola got to Arvin, she was a little bit worried because El Dorado may not have been great, but Arvin was worse. And she wondered what she'd gotten herself into. I don't think she expected California would be like that. And she went on to have two children. They were married for 55 years. Theola was immediately hired as a teacher in Arvin. And she and Woody both ended up going to Fresno. They had three different school districts. And eventually, they all came together to be Lucia Marr. And she lived in Pismo Heights for a while, but then she realized where you should live is Grover Beach, and they moved to a place very near to where she is now in Grover Heights. And after her retirement, she still continued to teach, and that's why my son knew Mrs. Lynn. She did substitute teaching for many, many years. And so I know that people who are watching this tonight are going to recognize her. And she finally quit. She loved doing it, and that's why she kept substitute teaching. And she finally quit when we started having to lay off teachers, because she realized that she was just doing it for fun, and all the other folks who were doing it needed to make a living. So she quit doing the substitute teaching, and I know everybody has missed her. So Theola, would you like to come forward and receive your proclamation? Or do you want me to come out there? You don't have to come forward.
Okay. Meet halfway.
Yeah, I'll meet you halfway.
People sitting on the back row that have so very, very special to me, and well, as well as Arnie, it's just wonderful to be here with all of you. Lieutenant from the San Luis Obispo Police Department was...
I think that's fair. I'll bring you this. Are you done? Do you have anything else to say?
No.
Okay. Whoops. Could you carry that for your grandma? Great grandma.
You can actually talk here.
Very, very dear children.
Well, Mrs. Lynn, I know that everyone looks at you and they think, oh, so mild, such a wonderful lady. And you are, but you're a real rascal inside. And I have a little story to tell how she got me one time with a little story. One time, as you may know, that I did retire as principal from Grover Beach School, but I was also principal at Harlow for many years. And Mrs. Lynn, I think, retired from Harlow School, but she would come over and volunteer many, many days and also be there as a substitute. Well, one day I walked into the staff room, and she was sitting there having a cup of coffee, and she was all excited because she was planning a vacation that summer. So I said, oh, where are you going on your vacation? And she said, I'm going to the Holy Land. And I said, wow, you're going to Israel? She said, no, I'm going to Oklahoma. That's the kind of rascal Mrs. Lynn is.
Thank you, Theola. And I think there might have been some other folks who wanted to speak. Was there anyone else who wanted to come forward?
Mayor, Council, thank you very much. My name is Keith Storton, and I was actually a student of Mrs. Lynn's when I was third grade, so that was several years ago. But what was really amazing to me is I moved away for a number of years and came back and decided I wanted my children to go to Margaret Harlow. And so with that in mind, we moved to the area. My children did go to Margaret Harlow, and I went to pick up my oldest son from third grade class, and the substitute teacher for that day was Mrs. Lynn. So I was amazed that I shared the same third grade teacher with my oldest son, who's now 19. And then 4 years later, I have a 15-year-old son. I went to pick him up from third grade at Margaret Harlow, and he, too, experienced Mrs. Lynn. So it was just a great opportunity for me to meet such a wonderful lady who I have wonderful memories about, and I'm glad my children got to enjoy her as well. So thank you very much.
Arnie Dowdy, 925 South 16th Street in Grover, longtime city.
I just want to say that I'm very fortunate to work in a salon that Theola comes to. And I'll tell you, if I don't bake, she does. And she has some of the greatest little goodies. So I think if somebody ever wants to know what Grover City back then and Grover Beach now is, they need to sit down with this precious lady and find out what we used to do years ago. A lot of history. Thank you.
And I didn't say, the thing that I always know is whenever I see Theola, I'm always going to get a really warm hug, and I know that I'll always get words of encouragement, so thank you so much for that. And Johnny says the same, too. And we have another proclamation now. This one is appreciation to our former Planning Commissioner, Brad Evans, and Jeff Lee's going to, oh, sorry, excuse me, Karen, Mayor Pro Tem Karen Bright's going to present that one.
Hard to follow that, but we'll give it a go.
Did you? And you had something you wanted to say to Mrs. Lynn, I think, too.
Well, actually, I met Mrs. Lynn in her living room at a community meeting that was organized by your husband, Woody. And that is the reason that I am here today, because he pushed me to get involved in city politics and volunteer and so on. So I have very warm feelings for your family. So, and of course, I kind of like your daughter, too. She's all right as well. Yes, they are. So thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, well, here we go. This is a proclamation of appreciation for service on the City of Grover Beach Planning Commission for Brad Evans. Whereas the Planning Commission is a 7-member board appointed by the City Council to review and make decisions on development applications and review and make recommendations to the City Council on zoning code amendments and general plan updates, and whereas Brad Evans has been a member of the Grover Beach Planning Commission since initial appointment by the City Council in March 2010 until his resignation in March 2013, and whereas his service on the Planning Commission, he served honorably as vice chair, and whereas during his service on the Planning Commission, he was involved in the comprehensive update to the zoning code, the adoption of the West Grand Avenue Master Plan, and reviewed a variety of residential, mixed-use, industrial, and commercial projects, including the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center. And whereas, as a member of the Planning Committee, Beach City Council does hereby recognize and commend Brad Evans for his service on the Grover Beach Planning Commission.
And we have one other proclamation this evening, and that is declaring April 26th, 2013 as National Arbor Day, and Grover Beach is a tree city. So Council Member Lee is going to present that one. And is there someone here from the Arbor Foundation, the Tree Foundation? No? Okay.
Okay. Well, I figured it was the gentleman with the plant.
Well, you'll hear more about that later.
I'll hear more about it later. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Then I'm happy to read a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring April 26, 2013 as National Arbor Day. Whereas in 1872, J. Sterling Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for the planting of trees, and whereas this special day, the last Friday in April, called National Arbor Day, was first observed with the planting of more than 1 million trees in Nebraska. Whereas Arbor Day is observed throughout the nation and the world, and whereas trees can reduce the erosion of our precious topsoil from wind and water, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clean the air, produce oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife, and whereas trees are a renewable resource giving us paper, wood for our homes, fuel for our fires, and countless other wood products, and whereas trees in our city increase property values, enhance the economic vitality of business areas, and beautify our community. Whereas Grover Beach has been recognized for the 29th consecutive year as a Tree City USA by the National Arbor Day Foundation and desires to continue its tree planting practices. And whereas the Grover Beach Parks and Recreation Department will conduct an Arbor Day ceremony and children's special event on Friday, April 26th, 2013 at Grover Heights Park from 3:30 p.m. to 5 p.m. to celebrate the importance of trees. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby officially proclaim April 26, 2013 as National Arbor Day in Grover Beach and urges all citizens to support efforts to care for our trees and woodlands and to support our community forestry program.
So. On Friday, April 26th, National Arbor Day is always the last Friday in the month of April. And during our event, we are going to be partnering with the YMCA After school program. We will be having five stations that the children rotate through. We have about 100 kids registered to attend. We are going to have the Five Cities Fire Department teaching fire safety. We will be having the State Parks Monarch Grove docents providing a station of leaf rubbing and arts project. We will also have the Cal Poly logging team there, and they will teach the children about tree cookies, which is the actual sawing off of a section of a tree trunk and teaching them about the rings and the age of a tree. And then we also have seed planting, a project donated by Betsy Erler, a local citizen here in the city of Grover Beach. And we will also have county parks, and the rangers will be out there and teaching the children about tree safety and the importance of shade and restoration. So we're very happy about our event coming up, and we hope you all can make it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next part of our meeting is our public communications, and any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. We will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items not on the agenda. And I know that I have somebody here who has some specific communications on trees, and so I wanted to, well, maybe do 3 minutes, but we may want to ask you a couple questions. So come on forward and tell us who you are and where you live. Oh, you want those on TV? Put them up there with
just
you.
Just put it up here. Yeah. I think they're fairly clean. So.
And we need your name and your city
of
residence.
Yeah, I'm Lionel Dennis Johnston, and I actually live in north part of Shell Beach, But I have been in the county here since about 1975, and I've kind of lived in a few places out in the county in Prince Road and stuff like that. And I think, like a lot of people, I kind of bounced around. I was born in California, but I served in the military in Hawaii for a couple of years. Poor me. You know, we complained constantly, but it wasn't that bad a duty now that I look back on it, you know. But I basically worked as an iron worker in Arizona, Nevada, and California, lived in San Diego, Fresno, the Bay Area, Los Angeles, grew up out in Fontana. And I don't know how I actually missed the Central Coast sites. One place in particular was a creek in Carpinteria, which had been a beautiful creek that I'd been to visit a friend. And then I had to go back and build the concrete storm drain that replaced that creek. Very bitter experience in a way. And I thought, well, we're just removing the nature and the sort of blood and guts out of California by removing all the native plants. Mm-hmm. No experience in it at all. But since that time, in 1991, we started planting trees at Cuesta College. The kids at Laguna Junior High School grew them. I never have had a place big enough to have a nursery. And that wasn't my goal anyway. My goal was just to grow trees and give away so I could just balance my carbon output, you know, and restore some of the wildlife. So since that time, we've probably grown and given away pretty close to 40,000 native trees. Mm-hmm. And this tree right here is something I didn't even really know about until 5 or 6 years ago, although it's been in California for many, many years. A friend bought me a leaf and an acorn from Morro Bay Public Library, as it turned out, and said, what is this? I said, I don't know. I'm, you know, not an expert on this stuff. I just know that the trees are good. And so we looked in the oak book, and sure enough, it said Channel Islands oaks. They have been in California, you know, for 25 million years. If you're an evolutionist, since God invented dirt, if you're a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew that believes in the Old Testament, you know. But either way, they're here. They're beautiful. They have found these growing on the mainland down in Point Conception and Vandenberg Air Force Base, so they still have a presence. They used to be all over Arizona, California, and Nevada when the climate was a little different. Now they're pretty much, they're in coastal areas. My brother lives north of Santa Rosa in the Russian River Valley, and he has one that's growing really beautifully. And they seem to do okay, but they really do well in the coastal areas. And David Frost.
Your 3 minutes are up, but I want you to finish telling us about these trees.
David Frost, who is the co-author and a professor at Poly of this particular book, which is probably the best book you could ever get on California landscaping, since it's just full of really interesting pictures, and it's not too academic. It's very much of a readable kind of a picture type thing. Let's see, where's that camera at? I don't know where the thing is.
If you just show it.
Over there? Yeah, it's just a book that has really nice pictures, and it doesn't have all the native plants, so you're not going to get bogged down in the Colorado River fuzzy mugwort or something like that. You know what I mean? I mean, if it's a plant, you've got to go to the Colorado River to find the seeds and grow. By David Frost's Native Sons Nursery on Campo Road, and they're here and there. They're growing here and there now, and so we've kind of made it a duty to grow a couple hundred of these every year, along with there's tanbark oaks, canyon oaks, sycamores. There's a whole about 10 or 12 native plants that are just real important here, that you cypress trees for windbreaks. Every old farm just about in the Central Coast would have a row of cypress trees on the west and the north side of the house. And then we saw this in Kansas, and of all things, I saw a picture of a farm in China, and there was a row of cypress trees behind these houses, just perfectly situated to block that prevailing northwesterly wind. But what we could offer you guys, we have some of these growing at our Cal Poly Nursery, and perhaps we could donate 100 of these for your Arbor Day festivities. And then I'm going to give you guys these handouts here so that you can share them. And I will actually leave this one with your Parks and Recreation Director so she can try and...
Is it marked so we'll know what it is?
She'll know what it is. Yeah, she's famous. Okay. She's on television. Parks
okay.
and Recreation. I have never seen the program, but I know it must be her program.
I'm sure it is. So I had a couple of questions of you as well. Didn't you just receive an award?
I did receive the Bill Dineen Environmentalist of the Year Award, and I got that at Surfrider, the Surfrider meeting. And I'm a lifelong surfer and a member of Surfrider and that sort of thing. Our nonprofit is called OneCoolEarth.org.
OneCoolEarth.org.
And that's kind of, we're not left, right, or Republican or Democrat or anything like that. You know, I almost started doing this because I was sick of politics. I hate to say that, but I mean, I know that's in everything, and there's party politics, and it all has its own purpose and its own reason, you know. But I just felt like I just wanted to do something, and we work with the schools a lot. These were grown at Poly, but we've had nurseries at Agoura Grande High, Morro Bay High, just San Luis, a lot of places.
And so the trees that you're working with, many of them are natives that we don't find very much anymore, and you're working with them?
Two types in particular, the Big Tan Oak and the Canyon Oak. The canyon oak is our version of mahogany, and the pioneers used it for wagon wheels and furniture and wagons and ships and all kinds of stuff. So it's pretty uncommon now, even though it was once one of the most, we think of the live oak as the most, but you have to do that. But then, you know, it doesn't do you any good to carry any of that kind of anger and stuff with you, because all of the pioneers, when you look back on it, were just trying to make a living.
And so, final question.
Removed the trees because they needed them. If they hadn't have survived, we wouldn't be here talking about it today. So now it's our little responsibility to help put them back. And, of course, we're not going to know exactly where they all were. So why worry about that? I mean, if you know there's a creek and it's bare, yeah, there's restoration. And I will have to say, San Luis County in the last 20 years has renewed my faith in everybody, the ranchers, the fish and game guys, the city officials, the county officials, the parks and the parks people, because they've all been really good about learning, because we're all learning about this. Nobody knows all
so
the answers.
You, can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
We're going on a little long tonight, but it is Arbor Day soon, and we are a tree city. You mentioned that there was one kind of pine that doesn't get pine pitch canker,
right,
that can be used as a block and actually eats up particulate matter.
Yeah.
Now, we have some issues with that around here.
Torrey pines.
The Torrey pines. Mm-hmm.
Torrey Pines State Park down south. And there's really two kinds of Torrey pines. One grows on the mainland and one grows on the offshore islands. But they're growing all around here and there, up by the north end of Shell Beach. You just see them. People can buy them from a nursery. And there's hundreds and hundreds of them up Oak Park Canyon, up on the hills there, because the soil is limestone-based and is particularly suitable for them, although they will grow on any kind of soil. But you can pretty much go to any nursery and order a Torrey pine. And to tell you the truth, we've only grown a few of them, but it's one of the things that's on my to-do list, you know, is to grow a heck of a bunch of Torrey pines. They're very beautiful. They're very friendly for a city, because they don't get really huge and dark like a Monterey pine. We've had so many Monterey pines, and now they have the pine pitch fungus. One thing about the Torrey pine is it does not seem to get that canker. And even European pines like Aleppo pines and Italian stone pines get that, you know, brown spotting, which leads to a brown tree, which leads to a dead tree, and there's no treatment.
And so, can you explain to everybody how they actually manage to, what they do with a particulate? You gave me this great story the other day about that.
The latest research on that is a finding that, you know, burning fuel of any sort, whether it's wood, you know, cow dung chips in India, or petroleum and coal, which are probably the primary way from a hot engine, and they are in the air. Trees that grow up out of the earth have a negative charge, so not only do trees kind of actually magnetically attract these little particles of carbon, but conifers, that is trees that have cones and needles, and that would be cypress, Hollywood juniper, redwood, you know, all the pines and
Torrey
stuff like
pines.
That. Torrey pines. Mm-hmm. They actually have a resin on the leaves, and that sticks the particles. Now, if there's not too many of them, they just kind of sit there, and then when we have heavy fog or we have rain, when our rainy season comes, they're washed off on the ground, and the natural soil bacteria and mycorrhiza just kind of eat them up and form them into their basic mineral components, which really they're harmless after that. Cabrillo College on Highway 1 in in Santa Cruz has a big, thick row of redwood trees. And a friend of mine, Jerry Long, works for a private company that fixes the filters and the testing stations for the air pollution control district. And he was telling me that they tested the air. That's a very, very busy section of highway. It's a like any major freeway in any major city, you wouldn't think. It's a coastal highway. One we think of as very bucolic, but there it's very heavily impacted. And so they tested it and they found, man, this pollution is really bad next to this highway. Well, then they had put another test station on the grounds of Cabrillo College there on the other side of this big giant row of redwoods, and there was about 85% less of nitrates and particles of carbon and all the stuff, ozone and all the stuff that comes from exhaust. So that's something that we're just becoming familiar with. And our goal is to get St. Patrick's School and Grover Beach Elementary School and Shell Beach Elementary School and those type of schools that are really, I imagine Grover Beach Elementary is not as bad as St. Patty's or Judkins or Grover Beach, but you know, it's not that hard. We always, just about always, put in little 1 gallon containers. We don't keep them a long time. We've just done some of these because people sometimes want a bigger size. For instance, a park or something. It's pretty hard to say, you can give this to a landowner and they'll put it in, they'll take care of it, they'll put wood chips and water it and, you know, keep the gophers away and things like that. And the best way to plant a tree is a small tree, you know, so from the tiny acorn the mighty oak tree grows. So that's our proposition here. We would love to donate about 100 of them. We just do this a lot. And of course, if you like, I noticed Theola, yeah. You know, working with children keeps you young.
That's
you can't
right.
be around them
so
and be
I'm going to have you wind up now, and we thank you so very much, and I'm sure we'll be talking with you again. Is there anybody else who wanted to come forward for public comment?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was very interesting.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. I can wait if there's somebody
else. No, come on forward. That's okay. Fine.
My name is Kenny, and I'm here from Regional Rideshare, the Regional Transit Authority in South County Area Transit. So May is Bike Month. As you know, it's just a few weeks away. I won't take too long. I know you have business, big business. So... we're encouraging people to ride bicycles, reduce congestion, get out there, get healthy, and just do it. We live in such a beautiful place. There are some events coming up in May. If you go to rideshare.org, you can see all of them. But there's Bike to Work Week, May 13th through 17th, which is really, really terrific. There's also Bike to School, May 8th. And many others. So that's Rideshare. As far as the Regional Transit Authority and South County Area Transit, we have a lot of good things happening. We've just started the Avila Beach Trolley to the Fish and Farmers Market. It's for free from the Pismo outlets, and it's been extended into the weekend service. And we're doing Earth Day next weekend. We'll have a booth and free shuttles from El Choro Regional Park across from Cuesta College. So the entire day on Sunday will be free rides and free passage to everybody throughout the county, not just RTA and South County Area Transit, but also Slow City Transit and the other agencies. We also will be doing mobile office hours with my boss, Executive Director Jeff Straw, who's a great guy, and he'll be on the buses taking comments from anybody about our services. And we have the Youth Ride Free program starting in, I want to say June, but I'm not sure. It is June. Anybody with school identification can ride for free throughout the county. So go enjoy.
This is the part of the meeting where we will hear reports and from staff, and after that on any subject or on that particular subject, if there's anyone from the public who'd like to come forward and comment, they're more than welcome to do so. We'll bring it back to the council, discuss it, and then make our decisions. So our public hearing this evening is we'll be receiving public input on the goals and work program for fiscal year 14, and City Manager Peralt is going to present that for us.
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the council, as we've explained to you before, and I know that you're well aware, the actual process of setting goals and the work program for the year is a very important step. Once it is approved by the council, those goals and work program will, in essence, guide the way the budget is developed and ultimately our work activities for the coming year. Essentially, last month, if you'll recall, we did an initial report. At that time, we took a look at the existing goals and work program and outlined the progress that we had made to date. We also took council direction in terms of revising that program. And tonight it took us a little longer than we anticipated to get here, but tonight is a public hearing to entertain any public comment relative to the draft work project, take final input from the council, and hopefully be able to get the approval of the goals and work program. Just wanted to make a couple of notes about how the work program was revised. Essentially, the overriding goal was one of economic vitality. That was the central theme. And then embedded within economic vitality, at least in terms of the direction staff took, was really a focus on economic development, which included tasks associated with the completion of the lodge and conference center, complete the implementation of the broadband network, and maintaining the existing marketing program. The other part of the economic vitality, that's because there is really shared activity in a couple of different places. And so we wanted to make sure that emphasis came forward. And then the placement of the charter measure on the ballot. The council also stressed as a major goal the street and utilities and infrastructure. Council directed that those items be combined. Underneath that, there was a good deal of emphasis on the short and long-term strategy for the development and rehabilitation of the streets. And in addition, there were a couple, two or three projects that we wanted to call out that are certainly a part of the CIP. In addition to making these changes, community development and housing areas have been combined because they're essentially being handled by one department. So we combine those. And also, as you noted, in response to communication from the council, we did move parks, recreation, and beautification in terms of its placement, but also want to emphasize that really beyond the first one or two goals that you've got set here, which again is economic vitality and maybe infrastructure, everything else is a priority. It's not necessarily in descending order as indicated by the number. I think that is essentially staff's report. The goals are available for you to go through and modify as you may see fit, take any public input. I've got Gala available up here. Unfortunately, it's small print, but at least it's there. So if the council desires, I can take any questions, or you can go about your final review, hopefully, and making any modifications you see fit. And at the end, hopefully you'll adopt the goals and work program for the coming fiscal year.
Thank you. Any questions of staff? Glenn?
I just had one question before we get, well, I guess I'll wait till we get into it a little bit more.
Well, now's the time for questions. You can make comments later.
I'll do a question then. So I was looking at item 1A, fourth bullet, the third.
Incorporate those tasks underneath the specific goal heading. But to your specific question regarding standards and how they apply to development, we've seen recently that there have been some issues that have cropped up, primarily with the way we are requiring our street standards associated with new development, utility undergrounding, and there may be one other that we would like to at least review with the council. We want to make sure that the standards or that the improvements we're receiving are adequate to offset that development, but we also want to make sure that we're not setting up unnecessary roadblocks to development as it's coming into the city.
Okay. So it has to do with our standards towards development and just working with developers and coming back to the city to make some modifications, I guess, to our development ordinances.
Yeah, one of those that comes to mind some time ago, probably about 3 years ago, and I know the city attorney will recall this, we spent a lot of time doing setting up an ordinance in terms of setting street improvement requirements associated with development. A lot of that actually focused on residential development because we were having some issues at the time with that particular area. I think what's happened is it's one of those unintended consequences. When you carry that over to a commercial development, it's creating some issues, at least with some initial potential development interests that we've been dealing with. So we thought we'd take a second look at that and come back to the council.
Good. Thanks, Bob. And then on page 3, bottom of the page, item number 4, community development. I guess you were looking for some sort of input.
Yeah, and I should have mentioned that.
Okay.
Essentially, with community development, there are some major next steps that we need to take in terms of continued implementation of the general plan and the update to the zoning ordinance. I think, unfortunately, Mr. Buckingham is ill tonight, or he'd be probably answering this question for you. But realistically, we see that there is a need to simultaneously. So more or less what we were hoping for is that out of the three, the council would call out a priority, and that's what we would work on first.
Gotcha. So you're looking to drop at least two of these?
Right.
Okay. And does staff have any recommendation?
No.
Nope, it's entirely up to us.
They're just about equally as okay. important and wherever the council would like to take that.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Sure. Any questions from Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Well, just a clarification. My major question was just that regarding for the community development and housing and the zoning, the update of the zoning code. So then to clarify, you're saying that each one of those zoning code sections would be a 6 to 9 month project.
Work effort, yes.
Okay. And now let's talk a little bit then, if we could, about the climate action plan. So we see that as being completed at the end of September this year?
That's the projection. I know that ultimately it's a public process and it'll take further discussion. I know that Mr. Buckingham is preparing an update that will probably be presented to you at the next council meeting. We'll get some input from you at that point.
Okay.
And then we move from there to developing the program itself, and then there's an opportunity for additional public input. And I think that the September date also is to work with what every other jurisdiction is attempting to do within the county.
Right. I believe that is the case. Okay. All right. Well, we won't spend a whole lot of time on that then. Okay. Really, my other one question was, I guess, just to discuss the business tax certificate program, revising that. You see that as a realistic date there?
You know, ultimately, it is for the council to make the review and make a determination as to how we are going to revise it. It's something we've had on our list before. The problem you're going to have is that with the business tax certificate program, it also is going to require an election, and then you've got a whole plethora of issues. I hate to put it that way, but between the charter, the streets, and the potential fire issue.
You mentioned West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project Phase 3, and so I got a little bit confused about what phase we're doing now and what that means. So could you just
Phase 2
explain that?
Is actually what's under construction now and should be completed by the end of the fiscal year, so it's not shown here in terms of a goal, because again, this is to be next fiscal year's work activities. Phase 3, just to remind you, is actually going to be and that those are the dollars that SLOCOG has allocated for us as it's T money, and I can't remember the other acronym, but from a couple of different sources. It amounts to roughly $600,000, and it's to be focused on the western portion of Grand Avenue adjacent to the incoming lodge. We are beginning the preliminary design stage on that, and we do need to have it under construction by next spring, if at all possible. There is some urgency with it, because there is new federal transportation legislation, as you may know, and it's going to change the way federal funds are allocated in the future. And so there's a need to get this project done in advance of the new, they call it MAP 21 program, actually taking over.
And then going back the way on page one, the last paragraph, strengthen the city's economic base by supporting existing businesses. You talk about continue to implement a program to meet with new businesses in order to acquaint them with services and resources. What's the existing program?
Well, we've been implementing it or attempting to implement it, and it is not fully implemented at this time. But the idea is that when someone comes in and applies for a business license, we'd have them meet with a staff person from primarily from planning. And the purpose about that is not just to assure that the business is going in the proper zoning. That's what occurs now. But beyond that, we want to talk to them about both. We want to make sure that people are well informed as to what city requirements are when the business comes in. What, for instance, the sign ordinance will permit. That's often a question that people should be asking up front as they come in, rather than finding out later on down the road. And secondly, we also want to make them aware of assistance that may be available. PG&E has a program that's available to especially small business that is coming in and making tenant improvements and going to be working with possibly energy-saving equipment, and they have a certain a rebate program that's available that makes that more affordable. EVC obviously has its small loan program. We want to make them aware of that. I just recently became aware of another loan program available through Rural Cities Association that we need to make sure that businesses, as they're coming in, are at least aware of what financial assistance might be available to them.
That's great. Thank you. And finally, under those same bullets, actually on page one, excuse me, it's on page one under the bullet points of your report, maintain the existing marketing program. Can you tell us what that is?
What I tried to do there is capture the language that was coming from the council itself. And essentially what it really is continuing to support and work with the partners that we already have, whether that is the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Chamber of Commerce, other partners that we do have. Specifically, as you'll remember in the tasks underneath that, the council indicated some specific events that we should continue to support. So it's more or less saying that, you know, indicating we would maintain what we're presently doing, but not growing the program right now because of our financial limitations.
And then also the press,
right.
You do a lot of press releases.
And, right.
Okay. All righty. Did anybody else have any other questions before we go for public comment? So no other questions here. I'm going to open for public comment and feel free to come forward and give us your name and city of residence. Hey, Kathy, could
on this whole thing and council, I think this is a much, much more directive and positive way of going about it than the way we had been. I think it makes things clearer. So kudos to all of you who were involved. I do have a couple comments. One, I'm remembering, I think her name was Mrs. Murray. She was almost selected to serve in Glenn's place on council, and they chose to move here. And I think we need to, you know, I mean, they weren't just passing through. They did research. They came here. And she made a comment that night. She said, please don't forget why we came here. And I think we need to keep that in mind. It isn't just business. That's not why they came. It was the quality of life here. Clean, and I remember her very specifically saying, clean air, clean water. So I would like to see more of the humanity side of growing Grover Beach as part of our goal setting. I don't know how you would fold that in, but that was one of my concerns. I had a bunch of notes written down. Let's see. And I think one of our challenges, well, we have several, but as far as the economic growth, I think, well, we might hope that we can bring some sort of industrial base or bases in here that can hire more people. I think we all agree, don't even have that. But anyway, so my idea was we have something in Grover Beach that is unique to us. It doesn't exist in Pismo. It doesn't exist in AG. That is our wetlands. And it's interesting that this is a nice follow-up to the gentleman who was talking about the trees. And that's part of exactly what we need to do is by attracting or by preserving the native materials, getting rid of the things that are not native here, you were going to have native insects, then birds. In other words, there is something we can market besides what we already have.
Thank you. We're way past 3 minutes now.
I know. I get wound up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council for council comments. And yes, I'll start at the other end again, since you got to ask questions first. It seems a natural progression.
Sure. Well, I just had maybe some wordsmithing ideas, and then I appreciate Mrs. Brown's comments about the quality of life. And I'd like, I know this is a planning document for budgetary reasons. I don't know if this is the appropriate place to put in some statement to the quality of life, but it seemed applicable to maybe adding it into maybe just a comment in number 4 under community development and housing, just a bullet point that for staff to always look for ways to promote the quality of life for the residents of Grover Beach. And it's kind of an abstract statement. It's almost a, it's not really a, Bob, I'm looking to you to get me through this one.
What I would suggest, if that's what the council would want to pursue, is I think you could expand the goal itself. Develop and implement plans that are consistent with the general plan, creation of a wide range of housing opportunities, and implementation of plans that improve the quality of life of the community's residents.
And there is some language to that in item number 5. Under that goal.
Mm-hmm. So. Is there as well. And I know we do have different areas, like the beachfront is located in a couple different places, so I don't know if it hurts to have it in a couple different places.
No, I don't think it does. I'm wondering if it actually becomes...
To revisit and...
I think we should, yeah, in light of what we're doing now. And
I'd
like to comment that I'm thinking that... these goals will help guide the budget, but this isn't a budget project. This is a project of what are our goals,
mm-hmm.
and then the budget follows.
Right.
So
exactly.
I just want to make sure we get the balance right.
You're right. Correct. A couple other things, if I may continue, is I know at some point we have to address item number 4 and prioritize, and we could do that now. And then lastly, I was interested in maybe adding under item 6, which is, I believe, on page 4, maybe under transportation, we're talking about developing multimodal transportation systems. And I know before we've done things about completing missing portions of sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And it might be a good one to look for opportunities and grants to complete sidewalks.
That, if the council wants to go in the direction, in that direction, that's something that staff has talked about. We, have not actually implemented it. We've tried to use some of our CDBG monies to do that whenever possible. Case of, for instance, is South 13th Street.
Right.
If the council wanted to... suggest something, it would probably fit either there under transportation or back under infrastructure, where we have most of our streets and utilities also listed.
Good. So I think the goal in my eyes would just be to pursue opportunities is just the goal. So I wouldn't be dedicating the staff or the staff time to it, but when the opportunity arises, and I'm not saying they don't do that already. I'm certain they do.
I think we've focused more on streets, and I'm going to have a suggestion on that, too. So,
okay.
Anything else?
No, that was it, unless we want to talk about number 4. Right
oh, yeah, let's okay. do that now.
Actually,
let's
before, to, we, leave
oh,
that
before
item,
we do that,
I'd
okay.
perhaps have mm-hmm. just a little bit of wordsmithing that may help that item number 2. Under arrow number 1, under bullet point number 1 on item 2, we do say identify proposed program and funding sources for short-term street rehabilitation. Maybe we just add curb, gutter, and street.
Mm-hmm.
Curb, gutter, sidewalk, and street rehabilitation.
Yeah, perfect.
Down the street, it's a low point, it's damaging the street, but also they just need to have those, okay, there's a word for those things.
Cross gutters.
Thanks, engineers. And I'm thinking that one of the things we maybe ought to look at is some work on critical intersections.
Sure.
We've never really focused on intersections, and not that we focus, but that we maybe consider those as another part of the streets. We may not do a whole street, but if we can fix an intersection, it may impact the street.
Yeah. Oh, maybe you go a step further and we identify. We have staff identify these.
We do need to identify.
And then we could prioritize them at a later date.
Yeah.
I think what would be best there is that we just take that as direction, and that becomes a part of the report on short-term street rehabilitation.
Sure.
We need to try and address that as well.
So we don't need to add that into the goals because it's part of the streets anyway. And that's already there. Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
Well, the beauty of this is that you folks have pretty much done all my work for me. So that's kind of swell. The only other thing that I guess I would like to just throw out there is we really haven't addressed the industrial center anywhere. And I don't know if we should. Because it is really, I think, a major asset here that it's like a diamond in the rough that really hasn't gone anywhere yet. So I'm just wondering if we shouldn't include that here somewhere.
Madam Mayor, if I could, and given this is a lot of work, the whole work program. I think that if we end up successfully putting in the broadband, it'll cover primarily the industrial area. That's probably about the, that's would be the extent of our work effort, I think, in this year in terms of being able to help that area move along.
And my only thought on that one is that we know if we build it, they will come.
Mm-hmm.
However, they have to know it's here. So there, I think marketing that is going to be critical, and letting folks know that it's here and it's coming. I don't know where that would fit on our own on this, because I know the Grover Beach Business Alliance really wants to weigh in on this. So, and I know that Digital West would like to weigh in on it. So I think that's something that, although the implementation will take staff time, we may be able to get some help with the other part of it. And possibly the EVC, too. So we might want to say, by working with partner agencies.
Yeah, perfect. Coordinate with partner agencies to promote. Market and promote.
Did you have any more items, Council Mayor Pro Tem Bright?
No, I think that was it. I think that's it for me.
You can jump in again.
Yes, I will.
So, Council Member Lee, I came to you and then walked away.
It's okay. It's okay. Actually, I just had just a wordsmithing question on under item number two. Am I incorrect in thinking that bullet point one, arrow four, complete construction of West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project Phase 3, and bullet three, complete final design of undergrounding utilities, are separate projects?
Yes.
They are. Okay, yes. So we don't want to put them under one bullet, two arrows.
Probably not, primarily because there are separate funding sources.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
Would almost have, even though they may end up being done at the same time, they'd have to be done as separate projects.
Okay. And then my only other potential wordsmithing was under that same first bullet, fourth item, explore alternative methods for improving city streets. Just to perhaps push us forward in that a little bit and say with possible implementation of a pilot project, if we chose one once they were prioritized by staff, so that if there is a pilot project that we want to basically focus on, so rather than just exploring, maybe we actually pick a project. I don't know if that's getting too fine into the details or not.
I think so, because I don't know that we need a pilot project. We need a whole lot of money to fix a whole lot of streets.
And I guess where I'm going with that is if we have a pilot project that we see as successful, that costs a third, a half, even maybe three quarters of what a
point. I don't know where we put that.
Well, if I could again, when we get to, and a couple of these things are kind of intermixed, mm-hmm. when we get to the short-term strategy should also consist of program alternatives. Mm-hmm. And along with that, the council will have the opportunity, if they determine, for instance, that you've got, five intersections and those really need to be the priority, and you can apply some treatment that is different than the normal process, that would just be the implementation step of that whole strategy. So one would lead you to the other. I don't think you need to be that specific. I'm sure that we'll look at the alternatives. If the council selects a paving alternative because it works to serve those projects, that's what we'll use.
And we'll just have you stay on top of it and make sure that we're always looking for the most cost-effective means, whatever's new coming down the...
And I'm sure we will all do that.
We will all do that. Thank you.
Including staff, who always does a good job with that to begin with.
I don't think I had anything that I haven't already put in here except the one... Oh, we still haven't done number four. We got sidetracked.
Yes.
Number four, so the sign ordinance, the planned unit development standards, and parking standards. Councilmember Bright, what's your thought about what should be first? Mayor Pro Tem.
I think I'm saying between the sign ordinance and the parking standards.
Okay. Glenn, what's your thought on that?
I was completely opposite. I was thinking the planned unit development.
Okay.
We just haven't had a whole lot of that going on, but we have had a lot of issues with the signs and mm-hmm. a lot of discussion regarding the parking mm-hmm. standards. So,
it's something that we've been trying to get to for years and haven't done yet.
Okay. So that's my opinion. Signs or parking?
Councilmember Lee?
And my first thought was signs. So mm-hmm. because with the sign ordinance, I think we can enact the most visually appealing city as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. So parking standards, I think we can address. But I think the sign ordinance gets us a lot of opportunity very quickly to enact or implement a vision for where we want the city to go. That's where I chose sign.
Creation, to know that... we're not forgetting about it. We know that you have some really big deferred maintenance issues that we need to address. So I think you have a commitment from the council that we have not forgotten that, and that we know that probably next year we need to start finding some funds to do that. So do we have consensus on that?
Absolutely.
Okay. All righty. Right. And that's all I had, unless anybody else has any other thoughts or unless staff has any questions about what we're saying.
I did have a question with regard mm-hmm. to number four, just for staff clarity. So is it the wish of the council to have all three of these still depicted, or to leave the sign ordinance as the task for this fiscal year and remove the other two and save them maybe for next fiscal year?
From
my understanding was keep the signs and drop everything else.
Or I guess the only thought I have is if it was 6 to 9 months, we may want to keep mm-hmm. the parking ordinance there just in case we do finish the sign ordinance first. And
in case you have nothing to do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then we want to make sure that if we've got one and two here, with number one being the first prior, the sign ordinance, then that next year we will put the PUDs on behind the parking standards. All righty. Any other questions?
A couple last comments.
Yeah.
So going back to item 1A, bullet point three. Now I'm getting into my wordsmith part. It's very brief. It says, maintain the existing marketing program by continuing to support and work collaboratively and in partnership with local businesses. And I wanted to say, why don't we just drop and in partnership, because it seems a little bit wordy.
Collaborate and partnership is the same.
Mm-hmm. So you want to take out in partnership.
And in partnership.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's, and work collaboratively, collaboratively with local businesses.
And then a number of these, it seemed like the dates, there was no rhyme or reason on the bullets, even though there's no priority. It's like we should either organize them by alphabetically or by date or something like that. But that's just a minor comment. It just seemed odd.
You know, it was just, and certainly we can go back and do that. It was just that as these things were presented or dealt with, and we reviewed the a real priority, and may in some way be more of a priority than the infrastructure changes that we're considering. And I think that's why staff had come up with that approach.
And it's fine the way it is. I don't have an issue. It just seemed, I was just under the understanding there weren't any real priorities.
Well,
to some extent.
Yeah, to some extent, you're exactly right. But I guess in mentally, in putting this together, you know, I was trying to also deal with things that I heard as being important. So, mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Mm-mm. Nice work.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So now we have the consent agenda, and these are routine items listed below.
Do we need to take action on this?
If you would, a motion to approve with the the changes suggested by council, and we'll go ahead and make those.
Mm-hmm. I'll make a motion that we adopt the goals and work program as discussed.
And I'll second that.
So we have a motion and a second. Can we have a voice vote? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No opposed. So we've got a unanimous. And then now we get to the consent agenda. And these are routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group. The recommendations for each item are noted in parentheses. Members of the audience may speak on any items listed on the consent agenda. Any council member, city attorney, or city manager may request that an item be withdrawn and to allow for full discussion, and we will hear those at the end of the regularly scheduled business items. Does anyone want to pull anything?
I didn't want to pull anything. I just wanted to make a comment, if I could, on number 8 and how it relates to number 10.
Okay.
I think I had a comment on number 8 and number 10.
Well, in that case, let's pull 8 and 10. Do we have a motion to approve then 5, 6, 7, and 9?
I'll make a motion that we approve consent agenda items 5, 6, 7, and 9 as presented.
I'll second.
And this looks like, oh, there's a roll call. Yeah, let's have a roll call on that.
Yes.
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 Yes, so that's unanimous also. And let's pull number, we'll do 8 and 10. You know, we're at the end. Nope. Yeah. Oh, there's, yeah, let's just do it now. We're here.
Yeah.
So
the dissolution of the redevelopment agency has been complicated and difficult. And in a couple of occasions, what's happened to us, including what took place and what is driving number 10, is that we had listed obligations on the what they call the recognized obligation payment schedule, and we had listed those payments for 1 and 2 and even in some cases 3, and the oversight board had approved those obligations. And for instance, I'm talking in this case the loans between the city and the agency, so it was our impression that those obligations would be met according to the schedule. And then at some later date, as a matter of further review by the Department of Finance, they essentially reversed themselves and required that different decisions be made in terms of payments to the state controller, et cetera, the state, the county auditor controller for redistribution of funds. I know that sounds very complicated, but this would have prevented it. If you had an item showing on the recognized obligation schedule and it was approved by the oversight board and then approved by the Department of Finance, this would prevent them from coming back and changing their minds, in essence, as to how those obligations were dealt with.
Did you have further questions?
My only comment was I saw this and I thought, well, should we CC our county supervisor as well on this letter, just to bring that to their attention? And it was just a question.
Ultimately, I don't know to what value. You know, you've got a member of your Board of Supervisors on the Oversight Board. It may be helpful to send a copy to him, which is Adam Hill, if I'm not mistaken. So that would take care of that issue.
Yeah. Just a comment. That was all it was.
Would it be more useful to send a comment to our state representatives and our senator?
Well, it should. These letters, realistically, one of the directions that you can
provide.
It is going.
It should go to all of them.
Yeah.
The other item mention in regard to that is simply that.
Any other questions or comments on this one? I'm going to open for public comment. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to come forward and speak to this? Hearing none, we'll close public comment. Can we do these both together, or do we need to take them separately at this point?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had number 10.
I'm
sorry. I thought we were just going on number 8.
Well, we'll get the together question answered, and then we'll come back.
These would be separate items, Mayor.
Okay. All righty. So.
Number 8.
Let's
10.
Vote on number 8. So this is a voice vote. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. So we've got unanimous on number 8, approving that.
Just a quick question. Do we need to let the city manager, the city clerk know who moved and seconded that?
We didn't have a move and second, did
we? Okay, great.
Okay, sorry. Wake up. Number 10, consideration of an amendment to the general fund budget to authorize a payment of $50,000 directed by the Department of Finance with regard to improvement agency dissolution.
And I'm so bummed to have to pay back the $50,000. So, Martin, was it your belief that we could win a protest case on this, or no, this is just the way it is?
We actually have discussed this through the meet and confer process with the Department of Finance, and short of a lawsuit, which I would not recommend for $50,000, we've done everything we could do to try to salvage this.
Okay, that was my only question on this one.
Good question.
And just a quick follow-up on that. Is it my understanding that if we were to potentially go down that road or not return the money, that we would be subject to either fines, penalties, or the
sanctions?
Sanctions, mm-hmm. And not getting future monies.
The other thing I did want to mention is that what will happen is this will allow us to get a finding of completion. A finding of completion will then allow those loans to be repaid. So it's an issue of getting to a point where those loans will be recognized in the future.
It gives us an opportunity to ask for the loans to be recognized. And then there is a whole process by which they will repay it very slowly over the next 30 years. Yeah.
And they can change their mind.
Well, hopefully not. If the other, right, exactly.
So, do we need a motion for this?
Yes.
Okay. Then I'll make a motion that we adopt the resolution authorizing an amendment to the annual appropriation resolution 1260 to fund the repayment of $50,000 to the successor agents. So, council committee meetings. I had some council communications. I guess as well, where I'll report on that.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow that.
Well, I really didn't have any council committee meetings proper. So my reports will be, what I'll talk about is under council communications.
Got it. Okay. So Council Member Lee.
And actually, I didn't have any standing committee meetings either. I have one on Wednesday, though.
And Councilmember Marshall?
Well, I had RAC, but I'm not really a RAC member yet until the board appoints me. But I did pull out their agenda, and I did notice they have some near-term items, which include Letitia Ag Cluster, which is possibly in our groundwater district. So that might be an interesting, if you want to go on and read about their the Ag Cluster. And then they also are going to be, they will be reviewing the Las Palitas Quarry and the Paso Robles Groundwater. All those items available online.
Good catch.
Actually, I did have a question about Letitia. Is that, have they certified the EIR yet?
Not to my knowledge. I believe they're still, they're reviewing, they revised the project about a year ago, and they're revising different sections of the EIR.
Okay.
That's my understanding of it.
And Councilmember Nichols is absent, and his alternative was Mayor Pro Tem Bright, and she didn't have any of those to cover. So now we're down to me, and I had mentioned the EVC, and thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Bright. That's actually next Wednesday,
yes.
And you'll be covering for me because I'll
yes.
be at the Legislative Action Day with the city manager. The APCD doesn't meet again for a little while, although they will be having on May 1st, the APCD now has an executive committee. So on May 1st, and it's a Brown Act committee, so they will be meeting on May 1st in the after the SLOCOG meeting in the county building. They'll be meeting at 1 o'clock if anyone wants to come along and weigh in on anything.
Are you a member of that?
No.
Okay.
No,
I
no, I would be, if I go, I'm a member of the public,
so,
as it were.
Okay.
And then this the SLO County Sanitation District, I believe there's something we're going to talk about later on that. And is that tonight or is that?
Yes, that's,
yeah,
that's
okay,
tonight.
Great. Okay, so actually I don't have anything to report either. We've got city council member items, and let's start with the consideration of a resolution in support of a statewide earthquake early warning.
Require the development of a comprehensive statewide earthquake early warning system in California. There's some material included in your staff report, but according to that material, and as you probably know, The state of California is on the what is frequently called the Pacific Rim, Ring of Fire, and is an area that critical earthquakes have occurred along this Pacific Rim, and that includes California. We know about Japan, some of the Asian earthquakes, and actually South America as well. And in these areas, the earthquakes have had devastating results, and this effort is being put forward as an effort to develop an early warning system. Other countries apparently have the technology. We have the technology available to us. The state does need to actually implement it if that's the direction they choose to go. I did call Senator Padilla's office, and we talked about the cost of developing an early warning system, and it was noted that the cost to develop would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $82 million, and that the annual maintenance for that system would be about $16 million. I did ask as to where those revenues would come from. The senator's office said that it would not be the state's general fund, that they would begin looking at other revenue sources. And one of those that they mentioned was actually a fee that would be attached to a telecommunications business in some way. So anyway, that was the information I received from the state's office. Obviously, Councilmember Marshall may have additional information, and a resolution has been developed if the council chooses to support Mr. Padilla's efforts.
Did you have anything further for us?
No, but I thank you, Mr. Peralta, for contact. I tried also contacting the office to ask him about financing of this Senate bill, and I was unable to get through. So obviously, Mr. Peralta has a lot of. As they mentioned, Japan has got this. It doesn't give you a lot of time, but it might give you a little bit of time, and anything to, as you know, back in the Midwest, they have tornado advance warning. This is about the only, this is as close as we can get with the technology we have now to give at least a little bit of advance warning for some folks. And that's primarily my support is public health safety.
And so you feel that the benefits outweigh the cost?
Not necessarily, until we get more into the cost and how it actually does. But I think to get to that point,
right? It just so do the homework.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
When the time comes and it becomes actually a, I imagine this would actually become V on the ballot if it's going to be a.
You know, my guess is probably not.
No.
You know, what would happen with this is it would wind its way through the House and the, or obviously the Assembly and the Senate. Once it was approved by the legislature, it would go to the governor for signature. I'm not sure exactly how they would deal with the actual raising the funds to implement it.
Right.
But that would have to be, I'm sure, addressed by the governor in some future budget adjustment.
Are there any other questions of City Manager Perrault or Council Member Marshall? Okay, I'm going to open this to the public. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to come forward and comment on this? Oops, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. And any comments from council members?
Well, okay. Well, it appears that they're saying that possibly seconds and maybe up to 60 seconds warning time. It seems to me that's not a whole lot of time, but apparently, according to the information that came along with the bill, that people, at least they were able to like stop the trains and things like that. So I guess, you know, anything that can assist in public safety is something I think that we need to support. Just seems like $82 million for, you know, a couple of seconds time.
What does it save us to save a few lives or have less? No dollar figures assigned to that at all?
There is. I mean, there was some information in here about that. Where did I see that?
I think that, Madam Mayor, that the major saving would be a life saving, and I'm not sure how you can put a dollar amount on that per se. It is that obviously, if you have a significant earthquake, again like the one that was experienced by the Northridge area in the early 90s. That can really ended up being a significant tragedy, and perhaps if you'd have an early warning system, some of those lives could have been saved.
Yes, I think you're right. Particularly when the hospital collapsed and so on, they could have gotten some people out of there and that sort of thing.
And this gets the Office of Emergency Services going a little bit faster, Diablo a little bit faster. There's some real benefits, and that's just speaking locally.
I have a question. Actually, would it be out of order for me to ask the chief to weigh in, or does the chief have a weigh in? You've just been to training on the East Coast about what we might do in the event of a tsunami. Do you think it would make a difference?
Actually, any seconds count. So my opinion is, you know, anytime we can, if there's a chance, you know, as Councilmember Marshall says, if there's any chance where we can potentially warn something to maybe get somebody, even kids under their desks sooner, it would definitely benefit. So I think it's a good, you know, it's like any warning system we have, it will be as good as it's implemented, but anything we can would be beneficial in emergency management.
Thank you. That's helpful.
That was actually something that they had talked about in here, about a professor. He received a text message and was able to warn his students to duck before light fixtures fell from the ceiling.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, wow. Right. Good. Any other comments on it?
It's only money.
Yeah. No, you know, my thing is that we're so sensitive ourselves to getting constant unfunded mandates, and they're all great ideas, mm-hmm. but they're not necessarily something that we can really afford to do. And roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Madam Mayor, before we leave that item, based on the comments that I've heard from some of the council members in terms of concern regarding costs, I think it would be a good thing to send a transmittal letter along with the resolution indicating that the council is concerned about how this is financed. And that, first of all, it should not come out of the state's general fund.
Perfect.
And find some equitable means of...
And it shouldn't be pushed down to the cities either.
Right, right.
I'll modify my motion as such.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good.
All right. Do we need to roll call again? Okay. Great. Good. I'm glad you mentioned that. The next item is discussion regarding use of city facilities for meetings of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. This one was the one where the South County Sanitation District came to each of the councils involved and asked if we thought it would be helpful to move the meetings around the cities that are represented by the district. And we said, eh. We said, no, we don't. We think we should just keep it the way it is. However, Oceano and Arroyo Grande thought it was a brilliant idea. So we got outvoted. However, having said that, we have the choice mm-hmm. of whether or not we're right. going to do that. And I did make that clear that they cannot dictate to us that we will have meetings here. So it's back to us again, and they're asking us to hold meetings here. And I know that the city manager has done a little bit of work on that.
I did check with both Mr. Karp. And I also, who's the interim manager for the sanitation district, and I also talked to Steve Adams. In both of those, the current situation, as I understand it, that Oceano isn't being reimbursed for the use of their chambers, nor does Arroyo Grande consider or are they intending to be reimbursed for the use of their chambers. There is obviously, anytime you open the city hall up, there are costs associated with heating and utilities. That happens. There are potentially some security issues simply because last time, it gets a little difficult in our mind when you have citizens that. You know, the meeting changes every quarter. It would be
every 4 months.
Every 4 months. Yeah. It would be difficult for citizens necessarily to find out where they're supposed to be. And I think having at least from my opinion, is a single meeting location actually assists citizens in accessing that board or committee. The other part about that is that I kind of think, and I could be wrong, that the idea was patterned after Zone 3. Zone 3 rotates amongst the member cities. But you have to remember that Zone 3 meets once every 2 months. So if you rotate amongst the three cities, that's not so much of an impact because that comes up twice a year for us, whereas this would be twice a month for a period of
four months.
So that's a significant difference. And anyway, that's basically my thoughts and what I have to relate to you.
So I'm any questions from the
council? I have a question. Do we have anything else that's going on those evenings here?
And if I remember, those are Wednesday evenings.
Yes, at 6 o'clock.
At 6 o'clock, Parks and Rec meets on Thursday. Normally, Planning Commission meets on Tuesday. So Wednesdays are generally open.
Any okay. other questions?
I was I was concerned about the finances and the staffing. How do you deal with the building?
So. I'm going to open to this to the public briefly. Is there anybody who'd like to come forward and comment? Seeing none, we'll close it and bring it back to the council. Okay, discussion.
Well, I think if we were to do that, I guess my question would be, how would our representative feel about being responsible?
Well, I don't mind opening and closing, but I don't like having our whole offices open to anybody who wants to wander back there. Mm. Yeah, and I don't think it's fair to bring the chief on board to make sure that no one does. I think that we have a unique setup. I answered your question, but in principle,
while it was open, and that would induce costs.
And it also goes to, if people are the expectation is probably that we'd be meeting in City Hall, and so we may end up further confusing folks, which was one of the concerns. Hmm. Any other comments?
I think some good points were raised. I don't know if we can support this.
Yeah. Was there anything else?
No. Sorry.
The thought that I had was, it sounds like Oceano and Arroyo Grande are going to move forward with this, mm-hmm. with or without us.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
And I think it would be more beneficial to have ourselves included in that rotation rather than 6 months in AG, 6 months in Oceano, since we are a member agency, part of the CSD, or the sanitation district, more appropriately said. So if it's going to move forward with or without us, I think I would be supportive of having us included in it. So mm-hmm. even though there is a little bit of extra cost, so and concern, and perhaps this is something we would need to do anyway, but perhaps we need to take a look at our back of house items in order to make sure that those are secure for having public meetings while we're here, which I'm sure they are already.
Well, they are, except that you have access to the restrooms, which you have to keep open, and that's in the rear of the building. When we're here and holding a meeting, generally you have, in addition to the council members, for instance, in this case, you have two or three staff members always present that are able to keep an eye on what's happening mm-hmm. in the outside corridors if necessary. That wouldn't happen with the sanitation district meetings.
Well, I
just think we can politely decline. I mean, say mm-hmm. we'd like to help, but we just don't have the facilities. They're not set up to have evening meetings without incurring staffing costs, and it's just not possible for us at this time. Maybe in the future something would change. We can send them a nice letter.
You can send their representative back with a report. So let's have
What do you think? How do you feel about this, Debbie?
I agree with everyone here. There's a part of me, and this is just, there's a part of me that says, you can't tell us what to do. And there was a bit of that, at the last meeting. I said, I'm not sure that this is going to be.
They sent us a letter, so we have to respond.
Oh, there was a nice letter. Okay, yeah. Then we need to send a nice letter back.
We do have to send a nice letter.
We do, and I'll report back on it, too, and I'll be gracious.
You don't have to.
I don't have to be gracious. Works better. So what do we need on that? Actually, it's just discussion.
Direction.
Okay, so you've got the direction. And the next one is item 13, request for authorization to send a letter to the Board of Supervisors regarding the sale of the La Grande tract to the state. And that's another one that I requested come in here. And the reason I requested it is because our economic climate has changed significantly, and our political climate has changed significantly since the time when the state parks and the county were negotiating the sale and purchase, or purchase and sale, of the La Grande tract. And it occurred to me that because we've got so many different things going on there now with our hotel and with the dust roll, that the more we can do to simplify things, the better it really is for everybody involved, and there's less political toing and froing. So I talked with a number of people about that. First spoke with our representative, Adam Hill, and he said, yeah, he could see that there would be benefits to that. Spoke also with some state park representatives and some of the local stakeholders. And everybody's really said, you know what, we agree with you, if we could just stop fighting about things, then we could use our time more constructively. Let's revisit it. Let's see if maybe things haven't changed enough that we could look at that again. So that's why I brought it forward, and just wanted to see if the council agreed with that, and if so, would they like to send a simple letter really to the Board of Supervisors saying, yes, we think that you should look at it again. And if you do want to look at it again, here's the other reason it came up is because there have been funds, $4 million, allocated for this purchase for, I believe, 10 years or so, and that allocation is due to expire on June 30th. So once that allocation is gone, I don't believe we will have an opportunity to revisit this anywhere in the near future. So I felt that maybe we ought to consider that, and thought I'd bring it to you guys and see what you thought.
Questions?
Yeah, questions.
So why didn't they sell it in the first place in 2007? What was the...
My understanding, and again, this is just, I'm working on hearsay here, but my understanding was that it's informed hearsay, and my understanding was that, and I know for state parks that's still an issue. They don't want to spend $4 million on a piece of property, and then they can't use it because it's right in the middle of the OHV use, the off-highway vehicle use. Mm-hmm. So that was the issue.
So they're not using it now?
They are using it.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, and they have been using it since 82, right. And the whole thing has been designated by state law.
Right.
But there's some issues there that need to be resolved, probably. Mm-hmm. So, well, one way or another, they need to come to terms on that.
And then the other question is, it says sending two letters in the text.
That's a typo.
Actually is just to the Board of Supervisors.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
At one point, we felt that we might need to ask, we might need to write to the Department of Finance or to State Parks.
Oh, I see.
Or to, who is the other one? Or to Senator Monning and Kachuish Ajin. And it turns out that State Parks is on board with this, apparently, and so we don't need to convince them. They're convinced, and sounds like the supervisors are on board, too. So it would really more be just a letter of support, or not so much support. We're still asking them to do it, but I think that they concur, and I believe that Oceano and Pismo Beach also would like to send such a letter so that they understand that we're backing the choice. And we may need that for the Department of Finance to convince them that they should give us another couple of years to reconsider. Any other questions?
Just one, which I wasn't sure if Karen had any more.
Right, did you have any more questions?
I think that's good
okay.
For now. Thank you.
It just centered around your understanding of the land use. So the sale of the land, and perhaps this is a question for obviously whoever's negotiating the land, but they couldn't just add a provision that says it's hereby dedicated into open space?
I mean, that's the problem. Open space. It was considered to be buffer and not necessarily appropriate for the off-highway vehicle use.
Okay.
It's not simple.
Okay.
You can look it up when you get back to the county and come back with a report.
I can do that. Yes.
And explain it.
Sure. And then just my only other comment was: do we? You said State Parks is definitely on board with this. Do we want to CC them on this letter just so that when they start those discussions, they both have the same pieces of paper?
Nope, they don't want to hear from us anymore. They're sick of us bugging them.
I thought this would be a good thing.
You would think it would be a good thing, but I think in this case it would be better to just send it to the supervisors.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my turn.
There's a time issue here. The money goes away soon.
Yes.
So I think it's important that if it's something that moves forward, that it needs to be acted on quickly.
So then the second thing, I didn't see where there was it wasn't that Grover Beach was specifically stated in here as benefiting from something like this. Is there a benefit to Grover Beach outside of tourism, I would imagine, is the underlying benefit?
I think for me, yes, we have so much going down there on the beach, and if we can simplify it, take away some of the angst, for the county, it's an issue because they have a sense of liability, and it's a month-to-month rental. And a month-to-month rental for a long-term, historical and ongoing use, it's not appropriate. And so it seemed to me that the more we can do to kind of clean things up, the better it is for everybody involved.
So you wanted to disassociate the city, the benefits to the city from your letter? I guess that's what
I think there are benefits to the city. I mean, there are near neighbors, and that the tourism's important to us. And so my thinking was, no, I think we can put the benefits to the city in.
Maybe we should then.
Because absolutely.
If we're speaking
sure.
as a city mm-hmm. council, then we should mm-hmm. be addressing why yeah. it's important
to
our
us.
City.
Yeah. I think that's a fine suggestion.
So I'm.
But it's
in
not
general,
my,
I support
I'm not the
letter.
Only.
I think I have no issues right. with it at all. And mm-hmm. I think the.
So what would you see as the benefits to the city?
Well, I would think, tourism and mm-hmm. economic. Well, it definitely helps our economic situation. Mm-hmm. Gas sales, grocery sales, even though they're all pass-by trips. It's fun to sit out there on Grand Avenue and look at how much money people have in their dune vehicles as they roll by. So if we're looking for wordsmithing, I guess I can
sure.
play with it a little bit.
If everybody will have to agree
if,
on that.
Yeah, if that's the direction we're going.
I'm just wondering, if they're already riding on it, why would it make it any different?
Because right now it's in the center, it's smack dab in the center of the OHV, the off-highway vehicle area. And I had it and I lost it.
Maybe I can help you there a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
So in looking at the track today with the benefit of some assistance kind of they accept all of the liability, and then there's so that someone does get hurt or someone does have an issue, then it removes the county from that perspective.
But, I understand that. Yeah. I'm just saying, how does that affect our economic development? How does that affect our tourism here in Grover Beach?
Worst case scenario, and jump in wherever this is appropriate. Worst case scenario, if it's not sold to the state, let's say for some reason there's a huge rift between the county and the state, and it ends up getting blocked off. Now, technically, our Grand Avenue entrance to the dunes would be blocked, or would be forced to go in a different direction to get onto state property, so which could reduce the use of that. Obviously, that's worst case me going down a horrible path.
But that's been raised. That's been suggested.
Oh, it has.
Yeah, or threatened.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. For me, it was that right now State Parks is managing the whole thing, and they're leasing it for $1 a year on a month-to-month. And State Parks is managing it all, but they don't have all the control of it. So a lease, yes, is a real estate form of real estate ownership. But if State Parks are doing the OHV there, they really ought to be managing all of it. That's my thought. And I know for the county, there's been a sense that there's some liability there.
Oh, sure, and absolutely. I believe that there is, no doubt. I didn't realize that part of that La Grande track was at the entrance of...
I'm not so certain that it is. I think it's south of the Pier Avenue and Oceano entrance. It's just an old antiquated subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be wrong, but when I read it, it was when I looked at the maps, I think Pier Avenue came out through Oceano. You come down south of the Strand. And then there's this old antiquated subdivision
that's
back
right,
where the
Dunites
used to live, I guess,
okay.
down in that area.
Yeah. So either way,
it still would,
block
traffic. It could potentially.
I see.
It's best. It's all these little tiny lots with different types of ownership. However, now the county owns a lot of these little lots, and the state owns everything around it. It's very convoluted that way. The simplest thing is if the state would just take ownership, they do a lot consolidation, they just get rid of all these antiquated lots, and then they just have one big parcel and they can just manage it. That is the cleanest solution to all this, and I'm fully in support of ownership transferring one way or the other. Mm. I'd like to continue to see the off-road vehicles, only because I think it's what people...
They contribute $6,000 per fledgling to the project from their trust fund.
Nice.
So the ATVs aren't hurting the plover.
I think it's a well-managed...
They seem to have a good relationship.
They seem to be thriving. The plovers seem to be thriving.
So that aspect that it's a lot of these little lots, antiquated lots, this is a great idea. Let's get the city and the county, or the state and the county to get together.
I understand that. I was just trying to bring it back to how it would benefit our city.
That's
what I'm saying.
And I agree with you.
I get that. I mean, I understand that, and I get that. But I can see, I mean, if we're talking about it being a liability to the county, then it could be a liability to everybody who's a taxpayer in the county.
Oh, definitely.
Eventually.
Oh, sure.
Eventually.
So.
Indirectly, mm-hmm. Yes. Or directly.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Right. If the county gets sued, that's our money.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So.
I think our letter should...
Should indicate that we feel it has an economic value and a recreational value and a tourism value.
Right. Their actions in making this merger work are to the benefit of not only Grover Beach, but the surrounding cities and communities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what needs to be said in the letter.
Yeah. There is a nexus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that, I'd be willing to support.
Do you want to make a motion? Do we need a motion?
Do we need a motion?
It's a voice vote.
Actually, we haven't heard from staff on this whole idea.
Did you have anything to say?
Essentially, all I'm going to say is I've taken notes about its relative importance to the city, the sale, and would be glad to provide some draft language for the mayor's review if the council so wishes it.
I so wish.
Yeah. Sure. And I wrote a pretty sparse letter because I didn't want to commit us to anything until we committed. So,
smart. Very smart.
So then I'm going to open this to the public. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to weigh in? Maybe could someone take Sharon a microphone?
Thank you. I feel like a real dummy tonight. Am I the only one that doesn't know what the whole La Grande track is?
We should have
a
picture.
What territory are we taking in?
Did anybody else have any good answers to that?
As I'm sure the engineers know, it's about 600 acres that sits right in the middle of the entire area that is used by the state off-highway vehicle park.
Which sits right in the middle of the whole state park.
Right.
It's in Book A. It's an old map.
I'd love to see that.
I can. I'll send a copy to the city manager.
That'd be really helpful. Thank you.
There's like three or four maps associated with it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I know I've seen it, but I just can't.
But it's just undeveloped lots out in the sand, so you really can't. As Mayor Peterson said, you can't tell what it is. It's south of Pier Avenue, south of Oceano, right against the ocean. It's all that sand out there.
All right. So, how about a motion?
And we know you don't need a motion.
Okay. Yeah. There is a voice vote here.
So I'll go ahead and make a motion that we authorize the mayor to work with staff to develop
send a letter.
I'll second.
Of support.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No opposed? All righty. Carried unanimously. Council communications. Oh, wait a minute. Council member items. We had all of these, but were there any other council member items that council members wanted to bring forward?
Well, I think I'll do mine under council communications,
okay.
I think.
It's always hard to figure out which is which. Yeah. We won't. Any others? No. Okay. Let's go to council communications then. We have the city manager's reports and comments.
So I need to go council communications.
You need to, we'll do, you're right, we'll do council members first.
Okay. Thank you. Briefly. Bad. Okay. The mayor's meeting, I guess this is where I'm going to do this. Okay. So mayor's meeting on the 6th of April, I attended in the mayor's absence. She had other pressing matters. So Senator Monning and Assemblyman Cacho Asajian were there. There were a couple of issues that were discussed. One was SB 7. I had sent both Cacho and Bill Monning an email regarding that, and I had received responses. A response from Bill Monning, but six, I believe it is, regarding the Coastal Commission and their ability to fine without where people cannot. Come on, Karen, bring it back. Where there is no appeal process. Cacho commented that he had already, you know, as he was a coastal commissioner, and he felt that they already had enough power for an unelected body and didn't think that that would be something that he would support. And I don't believe that Senator Monning, I don't think he was there at that time. I believe that he had gone. The other thing was Dave Mullinex was there from the League of California Cities, and he had indicated that he was going to follow SB 7 very closely and then would let us know, I mean, keep us all informed.
Thank you.
So it was a very nice meeting. It was a lovely day in Morro Bay.
Thank you for covering.
The other item was I met with Jennifer McIntyre and Victoria Carranza regarding Slo County Green Apple Day. And it is the California Central Coast chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council. The mayor had asked me to meet with them. You were involved with other matters. So I did. And what they're asking is they're looking for community partners, anyone who has an interest in making schools a better place for students to learn. They are basically asking for the county and cities to do a proclamation to support their County Green Apple Day of School Responsibility. And what that is they're going to be, it's a large-scale grassroots effort regarding recycling and basically student projects that involve students. And they'll have a different Apple Day, which is September 27th of this year, to look at the projects or, you know, be involved in the projects that will be going on at the various school sites in Lucia Mar School District.
How's that funded? Is it a private organization or?
Well, it's Cal Poly, Cuesta, all sorts of community partners. I know the IWMA is involved. Jennifer McIntyre, she is employed by the IWMA. They've received grants. I know that. PG&E is involved. So I think mainly through grants.
So they're asking us to declare something, some kind of a day, or are they asking us?
No, they've already got a day. The proclamation is recognizing the Green Apple Day of School Responsibility is the title, and it's just a draft at this point in time as well. So I told them that we'd need to see a final, and I told them they'd send that to Donna. But so basically it would just be recognizing the Slo County Green Apple Day of School Responsibility.
Okay. So we're not telling the schools we think they should do it. We're just doing a standard proclamation.
Yes, we're just recognizing what they're doing. And basically they're saying that that local jobs can be created by bringing emerging technologies to the county and tapping into rebate and 0% financing upgrade programs for school districts. Mm. Local government are critical advocates to advance new policies and practices, and constituents look to them to initiate and lead community change. Green schools provide a learning experience that transcends the classroom by using the built environment as a context for learning.
Okay.
that sort of thing.
So it's going to happen whether we proclaim it or not.
Oh, it's going to happen, yeah. And they do already have quite a few cities already on board that are, you know, that, and the county as well has already given them a date to do their proclamation. Mm-hmm. So
okay. So is there? So you want to know from the council whether, in principle, we're willing to do a proclamation, basically?
Yes, I guess we what we would. I suppose what we would want.
Draft proclamation if the council desires endorsing the program, as indicated.
Okay.
If you folks are comfortable with that.
All righty. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other council communications?
I just had one, if I could. If you recall, a couple of weeks ago, we had some members of the V-Day Five Cities program, and they just did a two-weekend successful run at the Trouville Center, the Community Center on Trouville Avenue, and they raised over $2,000 for the SARP, Sexual Assault and Recovery and Prevention Program. So that happened in our city, and hopefully they're looking forward to doing it next year as well.
And they had a wonderful tea party.
Yes.
It was really fun.
Terrific. And I was going to ask you, Debbie, if maybe you could you discuss the discounted train fares.
Oh, sure.
Again, someone had asked me about it, and I said that I would ask you to.
Right. The Air Pollution Control District does a program called Car Free, Slow Car Free. And so for all of the train stations in San Luis Obispo County, and I believe it's also the case, I know in Santa Barbara, we modeled their program. If you go to the slowcarfree.org website, slowcarfree.org, then you can actually link to Amtrak and get a 20% discount on any train fare going in or out of Grover Beach or any of the other stations. And you do have to sign up. It takes about 30 seconds. You have to sign up for the Slow Car Free program, and then you can print out a little certificate. And then if you aren't using your car, if you're walking or biking or driving or whatever, you can actually get certain discounts from stores and shops and things. So it's really something that we need to do again with our local merchants organizations and promote, because it's free marketing. You get space on their website.
Huh.
Your business does, and you get to put a sticker in the window saying you're slow car free, and it should drive business there. If we were to really work it, we need to work it again this year.
Yeah,
is that answer
yes,
the question?
Yes, yeah. Very.
When Kenny
very
was here
so.
Talking about rideshare, is this?
Is
it like part of rideshare?
Rideshare. I can't remember if what rideshare is slow cog or if it's APCD, they work in tandem on it.
Okay.
But yeah, there's a relationship.
Okay.
Reducing vehicle trips is the goal. So it might be too soon?
You know, my suggestion would be just to wait till he returns. It's about another week. And
oh, okay.
We can discuss it with him. And
I just want to know about it. Okay. I'll have to have lunch with the chief, I guess. Okay. Alrighty, and then also the hotel and conference center. Were you going to say something about that, City Manager?
You know, Madam Mayor, my suggestion would be that you go ahead. You've introduced it.
Alrighty, we spent a day in Santa Barbara. Actually, I spent some time also on Wednesday night, reminding the Coastal Commission who we were, just introducing ourselves, and then went back again on Thursday. We took a bus down, and it was Pacifica provided the bus and two meals. There were 32 people on the bus, and they weren't the usuals, because the usuals were all in Maryland at the safety training. And so it was great, because we had some people we hadn't had before and some people from the community, and several of the equestrians came. And we'll go into all the details, but it was a very hot day. It was held in a tent at an upscale campground, and it wasn't such a hot day, but it was hot in the tent, and we were heard very late. I think it must have been about 6 o'clock in the afternoon.
I think so.
They certainly approved. We had compromised on every single thing that was requested by the Coastal Commission, in the hope that really they would be willing to allow the equestrians to park on the south side of Grand. And the long and the short of it was, they said, no, the ice plant is ecologically sensitive. sensitive habitat, Esha, and therefore we could not park the horses at the trailhead. So it was wonderful news that we now have the 6 months to determine whether we're going to accept that, and we could certainly move forward with our hotel, but we still have the issue of finding somewhere for the equestrians. And I did speak with our supervisorial representative, Adam Hill, today, and he did say that he would be very happy to help us to review again what county property might be available for that. And so that was a very good offer. We've also, I've also sent some diagrams. It's all, most of the place we were suggesting for the parking is in the Grand Avenue right-of-way. So we've asked, I've asked for a little bit more information on that, too, to see if we could revisit that in some other form. And I know we don't have all the answers yet. I know that we still need to consider whether there's an appeal process. But I'm so disheartened about it because we tried so hard and spent so many hours. And
yeah, it was so close.
It was so close. And had the other two members who didn't show up that day actually been at the meeting, it may have been different. And our local representative, who said he would make the motion in favor, not only didn't make the motion, but he voted against it. So that was a big disappointment.
Wow.
Yeah. So we weren't happy campers. But we are happy. The good news is we've got the hotel. The bad news is we have to find somewhere for the equestrians because we're committed to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other comments? Did I miss anything that the city attorney and city manager were both there? Okay. And I think that's all I had on in terms of council communications. So now we come to the city manager's reports and comments.
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the council. I just want to offer a brief, because of the lateness of the hour, it's getting there, update on the West Grand Avenue project. As you know, the project had been moving along fairly well. We ran into an issue where it was determined that that the concrete that was initially poured didn't meet specifications, and that's created some issues for the project. In some cases, what that will mean is some of that concrete that's already been poured will likely have to come out. Ultimately, what that will do is delay the project somewhat. We're in the middle of working with the contractor, discussions with the contractor as to how to deal with the order of the work and the scheduling issues to minimize the impact on the community and the businesses as well. But I just wanted to give you a very brief status report and indicate that as more details are known, we'll be able to share those with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just had one quick question, if I could. Was there a thought of having another public meeting for the businesses and so forth?
I think we'll entertain that as soon as we know what the order of the work will be and any additional impacts that we'll need to communicate to the businesses.
And just one more question, if I could. With the potential schedule changes, are we...
In our package, you had sent a letter to the city of Pismo Beach. I was just wondering, do you have any follow-up?
I expect that I'll get a response from that within the next week.
Okay, thanks.
Good question. City attorney reports and comments.
Thank you. Just briefly, solely because of geographical proximity, the next Channel Islands meeting is Friday the 26th. It's in my hometown of Moore Park, and I'll be attending and look forward to seeing anybody else who wants to attend.
I'll be there.
Okay.
Anybody else want to go? Friday the 26th?
Madam Mayor,
cities?
Yes. I'll also be in attendance largely because that's my home originally, so it'll be in essence going home for me. So.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Great.
You need a date.
I always need a date.
Need a date.
Isn't that sad?
No.
It just breaks my heart. Okay. City attorney, was that your only, is that the only comment you had? So now we have a closed session announcement, I believe.
Certainly, it's the intent of the council to meet in closed session on one item, and that is existing litigation, Lopez versus City of Fresno.
Okay.
City of Grover Beach.
I grew up in Fresno. Didn't even notice that.
Wow. Okay. That was a throwback. I apologize. That's going back 20 years.
I apologize, too. We can't get over that valley. Every meeting, we have to talk about that valley. All right, so we're going to recess to closed session now, and we'll be back and report.
Why the heck did that come?